Good morning, everyone. The next paper on the agenda is agenda paper number 40. As phase one of the IBRA project moves towards completion, agenda paper 14 sets out a project plan and preliminary timing for phase two. More specifically, agenda paper 14 presents the preliminary scope of potential issues to be considered in phase two, and a high-level project timeline with the indicative timing and key areas for discussion with the board at future meetings. This paper does not include any staff analysis or recommendations to the board, and thus the staff is not asking the board to make any decisions based on this paper. The objective of phase two, set out in paragraphs 11 and 12, is to provide useful and relevant information about the effects of the transition to alternative benchmark rates on the entity's financial statements. This includes faithfully reflecting the economic effects, such as any value transfers that might occur as a result of the reform. To achieve this objective, the staff analysis on these issues will focus on the following aspects. One, identification of potential accounting issues to be considered in phase two. Two, consideration as to whether existing requirements in IFRS standards provide an adequate basis to determine how to account for the accounting issues. And finally, three, the assessment of whether the accounting outcome would provide useful information to users of financial statements. Therefore, and we tried to make it clear in the paper, it does not mean that all accounting issues analyzed in phase two will result in exceptions or amendments to IFRS standards. When IFRS standards provide an adequate basis to account for a particular issue, and the accounting outcome results in useful information to users, the staff do not believe that any amendments to current IFRS standards would be required. And as noted in paragraphs 13 and 14, to identify the potential accounting issues of phase two, the staff have engaged with securities regulators, central banks, audit firms, financial institutions, and all other accounting standard setters. The staff have also gathered inputs from the ASAF and considered the feedback from comment letters on the May 2019 exposure draft. Based on these activities, the staff developed a preliminary list of potential accounting issues to be considered by the board at future meetings, which is presented in paragraph 15 of the paper. However, as the reform is progressing and market practice continue to develop, the scope of the issues to be considered might need to be amended to incorporate other accounting issues that eventually we become aware of. And finally, in paragraph 18, we summarize the indicative timing and the key areas for discussions that will require decisions from the board at future meetings. And this brings us to our question to the board. Does the board have any comments on the proposed high-level project timeline and the preliminary scope of potential accounting issues to be considered in phase two? And with that, I would like to open it for discussion.
I agree with the topics that you've got listed here. Looks like the things I've heard people talking about. One that I have heard people talking about that's not here, but I don't think it's a problem per se, is the potential consequence that some more things might move to level three because of the situations in the market. So maybe that's just a completeness check. I think one thing, and you said it, Fernando, but maybe I'll just say it again just for people listening. I think this is going to be partly a combination of the staff confirming what requirements apply today and sort of saying, yeah, that's fine or not, and a combination of sometimes it might be clear what's required, but we may say, well, in this situation, we may want to amend. So, for example, one candidate might be that you could have quite a few things which, technically speaking, would require you to go through the modification requirements, and one question might be if there's parameters where we wouldn't require you to do that sort of long-haul assessment. I think it sort of is going to naturally flow from the order of things you propose anyway, and I agree we do need to start with classification and measurement because those derecognition questions then flow up a lot into the hedge accounting questions. Also some things, and I'm thinking about assessment of business model, where I'm sort of guessing that it might be partly just confirming which paragraphs to read as opposed to changing things. If we are covering those early in discussions, I think that's just helpful because it gives people answers to some things and comfort relatively quickly and easily. So it's good, I think, we're doing those things first. But I think the message, we just need to be proactive in messaging to the market that we realise that this is also urgent, that phase one isn't all that is needed and we are getting onto it. And so it's good you've brought this paper so quickly. Thank you.
Mary?
I want to reinforce Sue's comments about, I think that the work in phase two is likely to identify some educational discussions and some areas where the consequences of board thinking about amendments, and that every time we discuss something, it isn't automatically going to lead to a change or relief or exception. And I think you've got the right overall objective in paragraph 11 to provide useful and relevant information about the effects of the reform. But I think I also want to bring out that a principle that information will be useful and relevant if it faithfully reflects the effect of the reform, including capturing value transfers that may occur. And my example of what I mean by a value transfer is if the new rates that come in have, let's say, because of the difference in how they're calculated, a different spread to get to, you know, the equivalent of, let's say, an IBOR-based rate. If Rihanna, you change the terms of my loan from you to get me to as close as you can get, that there's presumably no or only very minor transfer of economic value. We may not be able to perfectly replicate it, but it's as close as you can reasonably get. That's one thing. If you look at me and say, sorry, Mary, spending too much, saving not enough, your credit score has deteriorated, and while we're doing this, I'm going to move you from, you know, to a different credit category and give you the new rating, the new benchmark equivalent of your current rating, you're in effect repricing that loan. And I think that that's something we should say you have to think about and capture and reflect in the accounting for that, you know, for that replacement, that the fact that it's being done in conjunction with the benchmark reform should not mask the fact that there is a repricing. You know, and it could be the other way around in terms of a borrower using the leverage of you need to change the terms of our loan to negotiate some extra value in that. And so when I say paragraph 11, yes, I agree, but I think the other half of that is to say capturing value transfers that occur. And then the other caution in terms of how much are we going to do and how perfect are we going to make this. Paragraph 12C says that the accounting outcomes would provide the most, you know, application of IFRS standards to the transactions once we've done the education or whatever it is filtered through what would apply. We have to assess whether that provides the most useful information. I don't think I'd put the bar as high as the most useful. If there's an existing requirement that would cope adequately with accounting for, you know, that effect or that consequence, I think it should be pretty high hurdle to say, should we modify it to get a slightly better, yeah, you know, reflection of the transaction. And then the last thing is, I think, as Sue said, there may be some operational reliefs that we think about because of the volume of transactions that's going to have to be pumped through the assessment of, for example, whether there's transfer of economic value in conjunction with the benchmark reform. And so looking for maybe some pragmatic ways to sift through those would, you know, is I think where we should be maybe focusing some of the relief efforts. But I think it would be bad if the whole consequence of this was to make it look like nothing happened.
Jung Woo.
Thank you. Yes, this is an interesting paper. Just a question. In the case of measurement of financial instruments, you know, the box here at the top Is there any kind of a possible relief on the measurement after this kind of a arrival, I guess?
We are not considering any type of relief for measurement because, as Mary said, the intention is that the economic effects of the reform are reflected in the financial statements. Okay. And the only way to capture that is through reliably measurable amounts that would reflect what we have today. Could it be fair value measurement, amortized cost measurement? So we are not considering any exception for that purpose.
But I think there would be some measurement implications for depending on where we go. And as Mary said, if we're only changing, I think when we mention measurement, it's more about what do you do with your EIR and how do you calculate your modification gain or loss, because those also impact measurement of your carrying amount. And so that's part of the issues that we will look at in one of the future papers is when I only change, for example, to use Mary's example, if I only get the benchmark rate plus a spread to get me as close as possible to LIBOR, what does that mean in terms of my EIR and modification gain or loss versus making changes to the credit spread itself, so effectively repricing the loan or extending the loan and those kind of things, what are the implications of the existing requirements in the standards in terms of measurement of that modification gain or loss, and what do you use as your EIR? So the measurement issues is more around EIR modification gain or loss rather than changing the underlying measurement, as Fernando has said.
Dan? I also had a comment on paragraph 11, somewhat different to Mary's. I was just wondering if you could please rephrase the objective to take the and relevant word out, so you just have useful, and then you can have another sentence that refers to both relevant and representational faithfulness, which picks up on Mary's point. It's just then consistent with how the conceptual framework is actually set, because we don't go relevance, we don't go useful and relevant. We just go useful, full stop, and then the relevant and representational faithfulness mm-hmm. sit underneath that as the qualitative characteristics of useful information. It's a pedantic point, but I think it's important as we set the objective. Thank you.
Yeah, we agree. We agree.
Any more comments?
That's not the case. Let's take a break for lunch and reconvene at 1:00.